Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, fully prepared this week to provide a show the likes of which few have ever heard.
Or seen.
Or yes. We should get a video in here, and so you can't actually see us.
Do the Limbaugh thing and do like have the camera
Gold mic.
On the... Oh, man.
Silver mic. Platinum mic. If you have ever seen it, or if you have ever heard it, or seen it, but many have heard it. I don't know what I'm talking about, Adam, so let's roll.
Let's roll.
Let's get into her.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we correct a big mistake last week when we didn't cover the Ford government because, boy, are we catching up with the doings at Queen's Park this week. Sex ed, racism, the cap and trade carbon tax, which isn't real. We'll talk about it all. And the new developments on the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Protesters are waiting to be evicted or see if they'll be evicted, and the government can't find a buyer, leaving them in the lurch. So what's next for our beleaguered pipeline project? And finally, we will look at the consequences of Greyhound canceling routes in BC, the prairies, and northern Ontario, and what the government's lack of action could mean for vulnerable peoples who rely on transit in these areas. But first, Donald Trump, excuse me, United States of America President Donald Trump.
It's always a laugh after that, right? We can't help it.
Yeah.
We just can't help it.
Yeah. Last week we talked about his now infamous meeting with Vladimir Putin, but that wasn't kind of the end of his foreign policy troubles. Although I think since we were talking about topics on Monday, the news cycle has been kind of hijacked by these what I think are kind of pointless Cohen tapes. But I think that the foreign policy stuff is certainly bigger because we had. As we were inferring at the beginning, he threatened Iran in all caps on Sunday, mostly responding to an interview or comments made by Hassan Rouhani, the president of Iran, basically saying that if America didn't cut it out, if they didn't stop trying to grab the lion by the tail, they were going to have the mother of all wars. He said it was up to America whether they had the mother of all wars or the mother of all pieces, but, guess which one Donald Trump latched onto. And this follows after, there was a report on the weekend that Trump was in a mood because stuff wasn't happening with North Korea as fast as he would like, even though it's still rather nebulous in terms of what exactly the stuff that is not happening fast enough is. But, long story short, it turns out the Trump doctrine is still completely made up. There's really no there.
Depends on which way the wind is blowing on what day.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it did start off on the weekend. It was grumbling about North Korea or grumbling about Trump's grumblings about North Korea. Earlier last week, it was, things are going well. But then on the weekend, Trump supposedly privately said it's not going well. And this was reported in the Washington Post. And then Trump went after the Washington Post because it's owned by Jeff Bezos.
Who's a legitimate self-made billionaire, so Trump hates him.
Yeah, so what did he call it? The Amazon Washington Post?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, boy. But then that changed. By the time the weekend had played out, it was like, North Korea has destroyed a rocket launch site on the Chinese border, and Trump heard about this and he's like, I appreciate this, it's a start. So there was a bit of, let's call it concessionary talk, for lack of a better word. It wasn't this is a terrible deal, but it wasn't completely negative. But then it turns to Iran when, like you said about the all caps tweet, and there's this back and forth. It's like something I was going to say Bond, but it's more like Dr. Strangelove. What was Rouhani's, do not play with the lion's tail? Like, it was all very kind of like...
Yeah, it was very allegorical and kind of biblical.
Iran's all philosophical, and then Trump's like, I'm going to kill you.
It's
like,
screw you, I'm going to launch all my missiles, all of them.
It's like a couple of... I've heard conversations in a bar that were more, also that threatening level, but that were more, that made more sense than this, if that's even possible. Yeah, and then Trump starts in about, well, the deal was brokered by Obama and the bad nuclear deal. And then other people were jumping in as well about the... it's along the lines of the original North Korean fire and fury comments that Trump made when he said, what was the exact, well, like I said off the top, the like consequences which few have seen, which to me implies nukes, because few countries have seen nukes. Most countries have seen some level of war or conflict. Whether it's just bluster or not, we don't know. We don't know whether this is just talk, because it was to a degree with North Korea. We heard the same talk, and then he went there. He's like, oh, what a beautiful place. You should open a condominium or a hotel with my name on it. So whether it's that level of bluster to get a meeting with Iran, but of course the Iran hate that this administration and, you know, previous administrations say, you know, they obviously delivered the message differently. The tension is different than it is with North Korea. And I'm not sure whether it's everything that went down in the 80s with the Iran-Iraq war, and they were all, you know, countries are backing different forces in that. Plus the long history of Iran, isn't it? It's not their constitution, but one of the, you know, death to USA is like one of their standard greetings. It's like... Yeah. You meet somebody on the street, it's like, yeah, death to USA. Yeah, death to USA. Yeah, let's go for drinks. I don't know. Also, I'm thinking maybe let's call it the Muslim angle, the elephant in the room. It's like they're on the list, the hit list of countries. And there is that sort of other channel of reason, let's say, for this administration to dislike Iran, because philosophically they fall within that the category, let's say.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just weird because, I mean, the new kind of friction with Iran is like a lot of Trump's stuff, it's self-inflicted. Trump is the one who pulled out of the Iran agreement. Although there is some internal friction in Iran because they're in an economic slump right now. There's even protests about it, and so Rouhani's...
Due to sanctions, among other things, right?
But. Well, I mean, it's not just the sanctions, it's the threat of sanctions, and there seems to be some indication that the European companies who have been trying to do business in Iran are pulling out, because even though, Germany and France have said they're going to keep up the deal, despite what the United States says, companies aren't wanting to get hit by, you know, the penalties and the financial hit when the United States puts all the sanctions back on, which is actually on August 6th. All the sanctions go back on August 6th. So it's like in 2 weeks.
Up before them. Yeah.
So it's making people who, you know, want to do business and maybe see Iran as an open market, you know, it's not worth that risk to tick off Trump, who's definitely going to be punitive against anyone who's trying to do business with Iran, or in Iran, I should say.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that once you're on that list, you're by association one of the enemies of the people. So yeah, the bluster is keeping up. And actually, just before airtime, I saw a couple of things. So this story just keeps, you know, popping up. There was General Soleimani, who we've heard of but never actually seen. There was actually pictures of him today. He would be the special ops, I guess, of Iran, the Revolutionary Guards, but like the kind of, I don't know, maybe like the MI5 division. His line along the lines of that sort of flowery, not flowery language, but we will destroy all you possess. So the talk has switched from President Rouhani to General Soleimani. He's jumped in on it now. And there was word out of Australia, and it was Australian Broadcasting Corporation, who are fairly reputable. I'm sure Trump thinks they're fake news, but I'd consider them a somewhat reliable source, said that there was plans afoot from Trump to bomb Iran's nuclear capability. Now, where they got that intel, I don't know. But it's one of those things that starts off as a small report, and you see it, and it's like, if it does actually happen, it's like, whoa, that would be something. I guess it's along the lines of the Israelis bombing Iraq's nuclear capability, and secretly at the time, but, you know, it came out finally. It's like, yeah, we did this because we don't want this on our doorstep. It sounds like that, but obviously there's leaks leaking all over the place if this does actually happen. But again, it might be one of those false kind of things put out there just to sort of keep everybody on their toes. But the back and forth continues. That was just before airtime. It was like this, that, tit for tat. But yeah, the response to Trump's tweets was pretty funny from the Iranians. They're like, yeah, it's kind of like, is this all you got? Is this all you've got? So,
well, and some people are saying that Trump's trying to emulate what happened or what he thinks happened with North Korea, where he was like talking tough and talking about fire and fury, the likes of which the world's never seen. And then, you know, 6 months later, he's having a meeting with Kim Jong-un, which, again, hasn't really gone anywhere. Although there's some indication that North Korea has dismantled this facility. They were building the engines for their missiles, which, you know, Trump promised back after the meeting, but it has, and that was one of the things that made him pouty, was that this looked like it wasn't happening, and now it does seem like it is happening. But, you know, there's nothing to say that they haven't moved that operation to somewhere else, which I guess if, you know, the if you know, quote-unquote enemy surveillance knows where your weapons facility is, you're probably going to want to keep it moving to, you know, stay one step ahead of them. But, you know, for it's the fact still remains, for people that know, this is still a game that North Korea, this is still a game that North Korea plays, where it's like they're going to ratchet up the tension, start looking conciliatory, and then go back to what they were doing. And the big thing now is that they're waiting to see if there's actually going to be this repatriation of remains from U.S. soldiers. This was supposed to happen this coming week. It looks like Pyongyang's kind of dragging its feet on it, and but they're returning like something like 27 remains, or 27 sets of remains, when there's about 5,000 U.S. soldiers that went missing in the Korean War. So, and this is a repeat of what's happened before, and Bill Richardson talked about the time he was able to get like the remains of 7 sets of remains back from the North Koreans. This is a bargaining chip for them, and they're just playing the same game over and over again. And Donald Trump doesn't know that, because Donald Trump only started paying attention to politics 2 years ago.
Yeah, there was an article in New York Magazine, and the way they put it was like, Trump is finally realizing that the reality show that's going on isn't his, it's actually North Korea's, and he's just kind of on it. But yeah, and it also sounds like they're out of Pyongyang, they seem to be taking a step back and waiting for Washington to make what they're calling a bold move. They probably see their dismantling of the nuclear sites and this business with the remains as bold moves, I guess, as bold as you can get compared to what's been going on in the past. But I mean, that's the thing with a nuclear site. They don't have, well, at least we don't know whether they have pocket nukes, but the types of nukes, the long range ones that can hit Guam or whatever they're planning to bomb or talking about bombing, you do need like an established rocket base to do that. So, and I guess with today's tech, that kind of thing is difficult to hide, as we've seen, because they were there's it was that annotated picture where like, oh, here's the dismantled this and the broken up that. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes maybe it is they do, you know, the things that are seen are what they want to be seen. And then somewhere there's a site. But, you know, you would hope, I guess, that they are doing it for the right reasons. I think, you know, there was that story early in the week about Kim Jong-un going to factories and yelling at people like, why isn't this done? Or you've been working on this for 29 years. Why isn't this happening? That it's supposedly that's unprecedented, because normally he goes and he's all smiles and, oh, isn't this?
Well,
oh,
on this camera, yeah.
This beautiful lubricant factory. But the story out of it now is like, you know, you guys got to get it together. So he's acting more like a boss, or the weird backpack factory, and he's demanded that these backpacks have more foam in the straps. I'm like, really? This is how it works there? So the backpacks might hurt the little boys and girls. I don't know. So yeah, but supposedly he was, you know, a bit pissed off with them. I don't know if this is the new approach. Maybe him and Donald talk business and this is how you do it. I don't know. But yeah, it's just weird. North Korea is weird, and Iran. It really was. Yeah, that's my deep political analysis.
You should work North for Korea, Foreign Affairs.
North Korea, weird. It's just a strange, hermity kingdom place. Iran, maybe not so much. I think people are surprised when Iran is on the news how modern everything is.
Yeah,
People in America have this impression that Iran is just some kind of like Bedouin tent out in the middle of the desert, and people go out and go,
yeah, it's Afghanistan.
Yeah, they have cell phones, you know, they have internet and stuff, and they have nukes.
Well, not yet, but
well, we know.
No reason to. There's now nothing stopping
a nuclear program, let's say.
No reason to not get back. No. I think somebody somebody said it would take them 4 months to get them back to where they were. This was widely been a criticism of the deal, of the Iran deal, was that it didn't stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons. It just kind of slowed things down. But, you know, on the other hand, we don't know how that would turn out now, because there were every indication that Iran was complying. And now we don't know, because Donald Trump hates the things that the black man did while he was president. So they've got to take them back.
Well, we can only hope it gets dialed back a bit.
Speaking of, I just want to mention this, because this kind of got washed away when they banned a CNN reporter from covering something in the Rose Garden yesterday. But Donald Trump has a meeting with Jean-Claude Juncker, who is the European Union Commission president, and they had a meeting about trade. And Trump comes out like, we have a great deal with the European Union. And it's like, no, what you agree to is that you're not going to have these car part tariffs, and that the European Union is going to buy some more soybeans and liquid natural gas, and everybody's going to be cool for a couple of months. And oddly enough, this is the exact same deal they made with China 2 months ago before they had started imposing tariffs on China. So there you go. You can't. It's crazy. There's no plan here.
One step forward, four steps back, three steps sideways, and one into the puddle. I don't know. It's
pretty much. Speaking of into the puddle, the Ford government has been busy. We'll talk about sex ed in a sec, but they passed an omnibus bill yesterday. Hey, remember omnibus bills, kids?
Yeah.
I wonder where they got that idea. But yeah, so they passed an omnibus bill in Queen's Park yesterday, and it was called the Urgent Priorities Act. So you know it was important. But it basically ordered the striking York workers back to work. It ended the White Pines wind project and approved a payout, although it's not disclosed what that payout's going to be, because the project is about 80-90% done. And also officially pulled out of what Doug Ford and his government are calling the cap-and-trade carbon tax, which are actually two different things, only one of which actually applies to Ontario.
Yeah, but if you keep saying it, everyone will believe it, right?
Well, so, yeah.
So, yeah, they tabled legislation to kill it, but there's no, I guess they're not, it sounds like the companies aren't going to be compensated, right? Or that's up in the air as to whether it's going to be like, you're going to get your money back.
So yeah, there's something like $5 million, but like $2.87 billion have been paid in. I'm not exactly clear on what that $5 million is supposed to cover.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The price of meals or something that they had, sorting it all out or something. Yeah, this is, I mean, it's one of those things that it's, you know, well, we did what we said we were going to do, but it throws a wrench into everything. And of course, it sounds like from the feds that, you know, the so-called carbon tax is going to be imposed regardless of what Ford and company are going to do. So, and that's one of those things that remains to be seen, because the Catherine McCann's like, well, you need to show us your plan. We need to know what your plan is. All the other provinces are going to have to plan. You have to have a plan one.
And Mike Schreiner has also kind of been hitting that too, that they've passed they've gotten rid of the carbon tax. They've, you know, they're mothballing White Pines, which is a project that's 90% done. And there's no plan going forward. Mm-hmm. So what's the plan? Maybe you shouldn't have done this before presenting an alternative plan. Also, it's worth pointing out that the cap and trade, California was supposed to be able to reach its goals by 2020, and they've reached them just a couple of weeks ago.
So entirely doable.
Yeah.
As for
California, a state that is four times bigger than Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean size-wise, I mean people-wise. People-wise,
I was going to say it's almost as big. What is it, 26, it's bigger than 27 Canada. Million? Or is it more than that?
Yeah. It's 50 million. There's 50 million people in California.
50 million?
Yeah.
And they're able to do it.
Yeah.
But yet somehow we can't. So, oh boy, I don't know. And also something else going on should be mentioned was the accusations of racism that came up this past week with the Ford government. In particular, what's his name? The rookie minister, Michael Tibolo, the Community Safety and Corrections Services Minister, went on a ride along at Jane and Finch, the notorious Jane and Finch. And he put a bulletproof vest on, and there was some accusations made that this was a racist move. And then, of course, who chimes in? The famous George, a.k.a. Giorgio Mammoliti.
Oh, Mammo.
From Toronto City Council, who was, he's pretty much, I'm going on a ride-along, I'm wearing a vest, call me a racist. So, of course, people started calling him a racist. Now, he wasn't, Mammoliti was sort of a player with Ford Nation, but he was still on the fringe of Ford Nation. Doug Holliday, you know, these people that always, always sided with the Rob and Doug show in City Council. But famously, Rob Ford called Mammoliti Gino Boy once.
He did.
Yeah, so if that isn't, is that, that's racist. Can one of our Italian listeners call and tell us if Gino Boy is racist? I think it is. I was even reluctant to say it.
But it's also worth noting that Mammoliti was going to try and run in Brampton West.
Which is nowhere near where he's from. He is actually from the Jane Finch area, right? Maybe, sorry, not that area, but his riding covers.
In the neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah. North York, somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the burbs. So,
which is why he keeps getting reelected.
But it's, yeah. And this is one of those things that's tough. Rather than just say, well, if Tibolo had said that he'd worn the vest in the interest, just strictly in the interest of safety, it's the kind of thing they'd be more along in line, because I'm sure when you go on these ride-alongs, the police say, you know, well, you can wear this, and we probably recommend it. Just strictly from a safety issue, right? Now, of course, how many police have died in shootings this year? Zero, right? There's been none.
Mm-hmm.
Police shot directly. However, statistically, and
well, depending on what the Danforth shooter, where that investigation leads, that he might have been killed by a police bullet. That's still uncertain.
No, but I'm saying that no police have been shot by,
oh, right. Yeah,
by
yeah.
Anybody
okay.
This year.
I thought you were talking about police shootings, yeah.
The stat for 2017 for people just shot, not killed, in Toronto was 591 in 2017 that they know about. But in 2005, it was 359. So that number has almost doubled, and we've talked in the past about gun violence in Toronto. I won't get too much into it, but I would think, you know, if you said, oh, I'm going to put a bulletproof vest on just because I don't really feel particularly safe, that would be okay. But yeah, it's one of those things that kind of spiraled. You know, is it really racist to say that? I think maybe the way that he presented it kind of came across as that. But
well, the way he presented it is, I was doing a ride-along in the Jane Finch yeah. area where there's where people have been shot and where there's places where there are bullet holes and all. So, of course, I'm going to wear a bulletproof vest.
Yeah. And that as opposed kind to of being the way, in the annex or one of those places like the
right.
Harborfront.
Well, I mean, that plays into the distillery the Danforth district, shooting again, because a lot of people saying about the Danforth shooting.
Yeah.
It's like, we didn't think it would happen here. Whereas, no. Like, a few blocks down the road, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's okay. I mean, people that's not what people are saying, but I mean, that's the implication. So
people seem okay when it's gangland, you know, somehow.
Thibodeau was from Vaughan, I think, or certainly one of the GTA ridings, doesn't have a lot of experience with rampant gun violence. So, I mean, it just looks out of touch and it looks bad. And the fact that the opposition asked him to explain himself and then he sends another MPP to explain on his behalf doesn't look great. Instead of just saying, you know, maybe I misspoke, maybe, you know, this is new to me, and you know, I the police said here wear this, and I did. Although the chair of the Toronto Police Services Board said they've done ride-alongs all over the city and never once have worn a vest
right.
in the process. So I mean, I this is like another one of these seems to be he said, they said situations. It's tough. But, I mean, this is almost old news now because the focus now is on sex ed curriculum.
Yeah.
And there's an interview with the education minister, Lisa Thompson, on City News that everyone should watch because it is amazing. It is the reporter's asking her what are the teachers supposed to be teaching the kids in the fall in terms of curriculum, because I think it was on Monday she came out and said only certain parts of the sex ed curriculum are going to be rolled back. Mm-hmm. And then she came out later and said, oh, no, we're rolling the whole thing back. And then Doug Ford said, like, no, it's gone because we're doing this tremendous consultation with all 124 ridings.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. So City News tracks Lisa Thompson down today. It says, what curriculum are you teaching? And Lisa Thompson says, it's the 2014 curriculum. And the reporter says, there's no such thing as a 2014 curriculum because that was the 1998 curriculum. So what are you teaching? And she's trying to get Lisa Thompson to admit that they're teaching the 1998 curriculum. But Lisa Thompson keeps talking about the 2014 curriculum, which is not a thing.
Pick a number, yeah. It would seem confusion is the order of the day on the curriculum. And, of course, the school year is creeping ever closer. I saw a report that there's 10 school boards, that public school boards, obviously not the private Catholic school boards, have kind of gone rogue, if you like, by the sounds of it. And they're, you know, the way curriculum is set up, it's like they present you with this, and then there's so-called additional avenues that you can pursue. And it mm-hmm. sounds like that they're going to try as much as possible without overstepping, incorporating a lot of the things that are being left out of the 1988/2014 curriculum.
Or failing that, things that weren't invented yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's supposedly in that curriculum, there's no I haven't read it, but there's no mention of anything to do with the internet. I love that meme where it had like the floppy disk that said, here's your curriculum for 1998. Same-sex marriage, consent, gender identity, LGBTQ issues, and these things are not even on the radar in the old curriculum.
No.
So it sounds like some of the boards are going to try and focus as best they can on these things. Like I said, again, without stepping over the line, but I mean, sure, it is the kind of thing that, you know, there'll be the parent who loses their mind because they saw the school book and it was like, the what? So, yeah. If that's the case, I think we've talked about this before. If you really, really feel like that about your child's curriculum or anything, just pull them out, okay? Just do it.
Except, you know, you're creating,
yeah,
you know, kids who can be vulnerable. I mean,
that's the thing. Oh, absolutely. No, that
and what I'll say from my own experience talking to these Rights for Life people who are mostly driving this is that they don't know what they're talking about.
They don't know what they're talking
because
about.
Because they're, you know, they're buying the bottom line of people who are their allies, who are making up things about the curriculum, and, you know, they're spinning it that, you know, 6-year-olds learning that a penis is called a penis and a vagina is called a vagina is somehow evil. Instead of
that's
just saying, like,
called.
Yeah, instead of, you know, you're not going to go around and say, you know, this is, you know, it's calling your heart a thump-thump or calling your lungs an airbag. You know, that, I mean, if you think that sounds stupid, not naming their genitals their proper name is stupid. And also, you're the one sexualizing it by saying a penis is all about, is all about what the sexual function of a penis is. But having said that, it seems like some school boards are actually going to ignore Lisa Thompson and the government, and at least 10 of them have said that, you know, they're going to teach the curriculum as it is.
I guess we should have done the disclaimer before this topic, eh? So
what disclaimer?
Too late to close the children's ears. Actually, no, the children should be hearing it, but...
No, it's...
I know, I'm just kidding, but...
American Pie!
I was thinking about the Sacha Baron Cohen bit making the rounds about, you know, if you touch somebody from ISIS with your bum, they become a homosexual. That's along the lines of when I think right. about these people's teaching curriculum.
Sure. Yeah.
And check that out, folks. Colonel Ahran Morad. It's fantastic. The guy is genius. It has absolutely nothing to do with the Ontario sex ed curriculum. But it sort of does because he, you know, convinced this so-called lawmaker in Georgia that, you know, if you do touch somebody with your bum, then they become gay.
But it you know, from my experience is that they don't know what they're talking about. They don't want to know. And I even straight up asked someone who was leading a protest, like, well, what was it about the old curriculum that was okay as opposed to the new curriculum? They didn't even know what the old curriculum was because their kid was in Catholic school.
Yeah, so. I'm all for if the protesters want to protest, that's fine.
You want to protest on the basis of actual facts and information? Go for it.
If you're going to call somebody out, like you go out to the people there, I would want them to have read the whole thing, all
cover
of it,
to cover.
Like we would do for this show, our homework. Please protest.
We got notebooks here.
Yeah, we do. Listen. Protesters, do your homework because of no respect if you can't say, well, I don't like it because of this. Don't tell me it's because whatever's in the book of Ezekiel.
And I want to remind people that 2 years before the last curriculum was engaged was a little movie called Independence Day, oh, yeah. where it was assumed that you could use the internet to upload a computer virus to an alien spaceship. Okay? That's where we were in terms of thinking about the capabilities of the internet in the late 1990s. There was also this movie about the net. I mean, there was There were a ton of movies where war games, where like it was just bad things happened because of the internet, and it was like the internet was a magic thing. And I'd like to think we're a bit smarter now, but Lisa Thompson makes me really question things. Okay, we're gonna take
a
break.
We need to get her on. Yeah.
Oh man, that'll be a fun day. We're gonna take a break and then come back with pipeline stuff, and we're gonna get on the bus with Greyhound. Maybe for the last time. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Weather, which is members from what is it, band again? Oh my god, Alex told me before our time.
Tacoma Hell Farm Tragedy.
Excellent. I was just flying in here. Anyway, thank you, Alex, for recommending the CD. That was New Boots from their new album, Wicked Weather, self-titled, found in the files, 2018. Check it out. Lovely stuff.
Okay.
Take our word for it. It's fan-diddly-tastic.
Find it at your local record shop.
Yes.
Purveyors of good LPs and cassettes. Yeah.
Where the heck? Oh, yes. Sunrise, I guess. All right.
I wanted to see how long we could keep that going. Speaking of things going long, you may remember Kinder Morgan decided it could not go through with this Trans Mountain pipeline, and the Canadian government said, don't worry, we'll handle it from here, and we'll find another buyer, and you're going to look so foolish. And it turns out nobody wants to buy the pipeline, so now Canada's going to buy it. Now Canada's on the hook for the $4.5 billion to buy the existing pipeline and the existing shunts and stations and things. And then we're going to be on the hook for the additional $7.4 billion to build the whole thing.
Whatever the number is, double it. That's probably what it'll cost. Yeah. Like, don't worry. We got this. The 65-year-old pipeline. If the pipeline was a person, it'd be applying for Canada pension this year.
Oh,
that's, well, seriously, that's how old it is. Now, that's not to say it isn't functional. It seems to be. There was one, I think it might have been in the Financial Post, that it was relatively leak-free, but they all leak.
Relatively.
They all leak. So, yeah, the deadline was July 22nd.
Think about it this way. If you get the flu for a week out of 52 weeks of the year, you've been relatively healthy.
That's a great way to look at it. Relatively leak-free. They put a little white pail under it.
Yeah.
And then emptied the pail, and then emptied again. Everything's okay. So as we know, pipelines, national interest is the jurisdiction, and the government has said this was, they have said, this is a direct quote, financially sound and required to ensure that we get the energy infrastructure built that we need. Now, of course, there's a lot of question as to whether we do need this. It's a bit of a flash. This has ended up a bit of a flashback. They thought they were going to find a buyer. They didn't. We've gone right back to the 70s, pretty much, when petroleum security in Trudeau Senior's day was very high on the radar, and they created something called Petro-Canada, which a lot of people were for at the time, and others, the mere mention of it makes their heads just explode. So like it or not, we've headed back to that. We actually own this sucker. Well, not completely yet. And this is the interesting sort of wrinkle in the whole thing. I saw a brief report last night that there's a little piece of the pipeline that goes into the USA somewhere through the Puget Sound. And supposedly the deal, any deal can't close without approval from the U.S.
Because it goes to refineries in Washington State. Yeah.
So if the protesters we're going to talk about momentarily were wise, they would write all these glowing letters to Donald Trump, sort of, you know, giving him this, hey, Donald, you know what? If you approve this, this will happen. Donald, it looks like it may come down to Donald as to whether any deal would go through. It goes in Canada, it goes through Parliament, the sitting government of the day. But if I understand it right, the executive decision for pipelines in the States, as Obama did, goes through the presidency.
There's a particular group that is fronted by the, not the Commerce Secretary, the Secretary of the Treasury, which is now Suicide Squad executive producer, Steve Mnuchin. Go look at the end credits for Suicide Squad. You'll see. He's on a panel that sort of reviews this, and then it goes to the president as the head of the executive for a rubber stamp. I kind of think that any hope that Donald Trump will save us on this is fleeting at best, because, you know, I've been on pipelines, right? His stance on pipelines has been, drill.
No, but
baby,
I think if you wanted to be vindictive because we own it as opposed to one of his corporate pals, then, you know, it's hard to say what the Donald will do. But I'm not saying that it'll make or break it, but it sounds like that it might quite possibly. It would be really weird if it did, but again, not surprising. So protesters get writing. No, I don't know. But speaking of which, there are a ton. The Greenpeace dropped a banner off the Olympic Stadium in Montreal. It was "Don't dirty our money," and then of course the protesters on the front lines are the ones in Burnaby at the Burnaby camp. And of course, when you look up the active protest, it's mostly Coast Salish people, but I guess others are involved. The first Google ad that comes up is KeepCanadaWorking.ca, which is a pipeline shill.
Right.
Website,
they're supposedly working class, let us work.
There's
but
jobs.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
There's jobs in them there hills.
Right.
But the people at the, they're calling it Camp Cloud. It's very near a tank farm. And I guess the eviction notice says they have to be out by 6 a.m. Saturday. So we can probably expect some sparks there if they leave voluntarily. But it sounds
they're challenging the eviction order now in court.
Was it religious grounds? I think it was some kind of constitutional thing on religious grounds.
Because they have like a sacred fire there. It could, because it's...
Considering how dry it is in BC and how much of it is on fire.
That's.
I mean, I'm all for the sacred fire, but...
probably not the most
you might want to do
idea.
It in a chimney or something rather than just burning
Yeah, and
logs.
If they have a whole setup there, like they are encamped. It'll be curious to see if that will be allowed to continue. The city of Burnaby seems to have an absolute hate on for this. It just wants them gone. I guess they hate the nuisance, and they probably have some substantial police force presence there as well.
And they've built permanent structures too, which is, you know, it's never a temporary camp when somebody gets, you know, I saw a picture of it, like a two-story
sure.
hut or shack, and perhaps it's built to specs. I don't know, but that's the kind. That's probably not.
that's a good guess.
But that is the kind of thing that they look at, and you're right. It's lots of. I wouldn't say red flags, but like, you know, red flag to the bull, maybe. Like, okay, this has to stop. So as to whether they're going to get, you know, the 6 a.m. thing, or whether they're going to get cleared out early in the morning, which is usually how these things go. So when they're least expecting, I guess they're expecting that they've been given the notice, but I don't know how quickly that court case is going to go through, because it's less, you know, just over 24 hours before Saturday morning. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't think they'll be the only protesters either. It'll be more along the line, but the Burnaby ones in particular are the ones that are under the crosshairs right now. So,
well, I mean, the flip side of this too is there was a report that there might a collection of BC First Nations might be getting a stake in the pipeline, or might be seeking a stake.
And that's the other thing. There's backed by support it,
backed by two of the six major banks, which is incredible if true. And that would, I think that would probably undermine the protesters, because a lot of this is being done in the name of First Nations people who have not been properly consulted. But if First Nations are going to be getting, going to be owning a piece of this and maybe seeing some of the benefits, that's going to make the, we're doing this for the indigenous people argument a little harder to, you know, sell.
Yeah. And it's too bad that, that there's the schism there.
Yeah.
Like the conflict between the nations, among the nations, I guess. So,
yeah. And not to bring politics into this, but apparently 60% of Albertans support the federal government's move on this, which...
And the province is for it, too, right?
Yeah, and Rachel Notley wants to put up a stake as well. But, you know, I wonder, because part of this, too, has to do with... you know, electioneering on the part of the government that, you know, they want to be able to win in places like Alberta and Saskatchewan by appearing pro-business. And, you know, and I wonder if this is going to have any effect. If you have 60% of Albertans, like, favoring this, you know, is there any political upside? Because there's certainly a lot of political downside. You know, you have members of Justin Trudeau's own youth council turning on him on this. And that's going to be the real question. But I will say that it doesn't look good that you have the federal government saying, oh, we can find another. Like, this project is so huge. Like, we'll easily find another buyer, and they don't. Which makes
I think they may have secretly known that that wasn't going to happen. Like, who's going to step up? Who wants...
Well, I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, we're meant to believe this
is... 65-year-old... almost written off infrastructure, right?
Like, no, I understand that, and I would be in the same frame of mind, but the way this is constantly sold is that it's a slam dunk, that this is going to be a moneymaker, that this is easy money we're talking about. And so what does it, all this private industry, all these people with billions of dollars at their command for oil and gas extraction, what do they know that Justin Trudeau and the federal government apparently don't? When it comes to building this pipeline,
secret solar panel factory somewhere.
I mean, before we get off this topic, there was another thing in the Financial Post that said, you know what, the real thing, the real problem with this is that the illusion that this is that they're going to be opening up whole new markets in Asia for unrefined bitumen, because the majority of the refineries in the world are in the U.S. and in the Gulf. Only two of 48 tankers that have ported in BC from in the last year went to Asia. Two out of 48. I mean, and that's a total of like 500,000 barrels when the pipeline presently produces 300,000 barrels a day. So it took, you know, 2 days worth, not even 2 days worth of oil went to Asia.
It'd take a heck of a lot of diesel to slug that all the way to Asia too, but...
Yeah.
That's another story.
That is another story.
Speaking of slugging it and diesel. I got the segue.
Yeah, it was a good day. It's been a good day for segues. This is kind of a sad story, but Greyhound announced last week, or earlier this month, I should say, that they're cutting routes in BC, the prairies, and Northern Ontario, out of these service rural areas. But as of October 31st, basically Greyhound will just be operating in Ontario and Quebec, with one route between Vancouver and Seattle constituting the only run on the West Coast. Greyhound, according to Greyhound, they said that ridership is down 51% or 41% since 2010, 57% in Manitoba alone, and they've lost $35 million in cargo pay since 2010. Greyhound does a pretty good clip in terms of delivering cargo from place to place. But it seems that there's no money west of the Great Lakes for Greyhound anymore.
And such a massive area, too. And, of course, the blame game begins right away. Unregulated carriers, I think they're implying that
ride-sharing services of any kind, long-term or short-haul, like Uber and that, are eating into everything. Also, low-budget airlines. One of the ones I saw was that you can... The Edmonton to Kelowna run on the bus was 16 hours and $92. You can get a Swoop Airlines, which I've never heard of. I think they're a newish charter. 45 minutes for $119. Why on earth would you take that bus ride? So there are, it sounds like there are many, many factors that have... And I'm sure with the cargo, too, because there was a somebody talking who runs a garage kind of in the middle of nowhere garage. When they're ordering parts, they would order them through the Greyhound and they would come fairly quickly, and I guess it would take longer now. I would assume that Amazon may have something to do with that as well, right? I don't know. But, yeah, so there's almost 100-year history out that way, and it's just gone. The Greyhound is finished. Something that happened yesterday was that the Alberta government is stepping in. They're going to establish a couple of routes serving four communities in the larger, I guess, a largish catchment area of Red Deer Medicine Hat, running it as a pilot project. So they'll actually have six. They're calling them pilot projects, but I've got the feeling that they're going to continue. Because there's no... This is the kind of thing where if the private market collapses such as it has, I mean, the only fix for it, unless there's some, you know, industrious charter coming to town, is for the government to get involved, or it isn't going to happen.
Yeah, there's I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, because there's an article on Taiyi that had... Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU.
Yep, ATU, yeah.
So I was trying to figure out the acronym. ATU members, one of the president of the ATU, because there's something like 500
yeah,
jobs.
Yeah, 450, somewhere in that.
Yeah, that are being lost because of this. Mm-hmm. That they're talking about that the BC government's been running BC Transit, which has basically been running along the Highway of Tears. Not
yeah, for a very specific
for
reason.
A very
yeah.
specific reason.
They're
that,
not
you
trying
know,
to steal market share by doing that. I mean, that's
right,
like,
but
you need a bus there.
But the ATU's argument was that you have Greyhound competing with subsidized transit, also servicing rural, in its very specific rural area in BC. Mm. Meanwhile, you had a Greyhound also come out and saying, like, we've been telling the government for years, we need help subsidizing service to these areas. And they seem to not listen. Now, I think the gut check reaction is that Greyhound is a private company.
Yeah, and they don't subsidize private companies, right? Right. I mean, when they do, when they want to, like, I don't know, Bombardier. But sure.
I mean, there's precedent.
Yeah.
But I mean, even areas that I think are probably well serviced and well used, like here in Southern Ontario, Greyhound cut routes here last fall.
Oh yeah,
to Kitchener and Toronto.
Hourly to Toronto from here, right?
Oh yeah,
you catch it right in front of the OVC there. And now yeah. It's like I didn't even know when you'd catch the bus. Now, mind you, with the other infrastructure that's come online, with the more there's more GO buses, there's more trains, and they're subsidized, so the price is obviously less, and you probably can find a more direct route on GO. I guess that's, you know, unique to this area compared to... it's such a massive area, though. Like, from Manitoba on over, all gone. Like you said, except for that one route, which I guess is profitable to a degree, or they wouldn't have kept it. I don't know if it's because it's a cross-border thing where it's, you know, at an advantage to the U.S. as well. It's kind of odd. There'll be the little oddball route. But yeah, it's there was talk of, I think it's like a bus line in New Brunswick, saying that, oh yeah, we can pick up all the slack. I heard there was like a First Nations group as well willing to get in on. It sounds like if they are going to keep it up, the trend is it wouldn't be the classic Greyhound bus, which do cost a fortune to run, but more van like buses, or you know, it's the smaller buses you see that hold maybe, I'm going to say 15,
like the red car.
Yeah, because the story that they did in the CBC, they went on one bus run, and it was the classic long Greyhound bus, and there was three people on it. Now, mind you, I've been on buses, GO buses in Ontario early in the morning into Toronto that have only had three people on them too, and it does seem a bit ridiculous. But I mean, if that's, you know, but there are times during the day where those buses are jammed, whereas it sounds like there is no jamming of the buses out
There's also different times during the year too. Like if you're going to get on the GO bus at 7 o'clock in the morning on a weekday in July, maybe not as busy because of like vacations and things, versus like 7 o'clock in the morning in September, where you got people going to school and people going back to work and all those sorts of things. So it depends. But you know what slays you is that gas prices go up, or people hit tough times and people look for the assist, and then where is it? I tell people all the time, like, you want to fill up the bus, you jack gas prices, because the bus, when I was commuting to Toronto a couple of days a week in 2009 after the financial crash, it was full every day.
Yep.
I mean, that was before the GO train and all, but the flip side of it too is that Liz Sandals told me that Greyhound has exclusivity to an express run between Guelph and Toronto. I don't know if that's true. I'm just repeating what I was told. Because
maybe
some
they
people
bought
said
the
that
rights
wasn't true.
And something
like that.
That's existed for a long time, probably.
But so you can make the argument that Metrolinx is subsidized by the taxpayers and by the government. Greyhound has, as you indicated, has a long history and has long-standing like traditions of service that people have come to depend on. Like you want a late night bus out of Toronto, usually it's Greyhound that you've had to depend on as like on a weekend, like on a Saturday, Sunday, and all that.
I don't know if you remember because you may have been a little bit young, but there was also when I first started coming here, Grey Coach still existed as well, and that was like. So here's like a rival bus line that did. It was more localized. It didn't go as far as Greyhound did, and of course there was
Hamilton, Niagara Falls from here, and it's still the only direct bus to Kitchener.
The Greyhound is as a
Metrolink, so you had to hang out in Aberfoyle for an hour to wait for the connecting bus to go to Kitchener.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's very ridiculous. So, I mean, obviously all provinces and districts have their transit issues, but this is going to pull the plug on a lot. This will strand a lot of people. There will be lots. Because even though, the numbers are down, way down, it's something like 57% in Manitoba, 55% in, I believe that was Alberta, or sorry, Saskatchewan, down 55. And then I think they'd said that BC was almost halved in terms of the amount of people using it. Which sounds like a lot and is a lot, but that leaves, in BC's case, that means, it was something like 800,000 people still took it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no option for them yet, right?
Right, and there's been a lot of talk about this leaves Indigenous people in the lurch, leaves vulnerable people in the lurch, leaves people trying to flee domestic abuse situations because, for a lot of people...
How do you get out?
A Greyhound ticket is the cheapest, most direct way to get out of town and put like miles between you and your abuser. So, I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions. And, the NDP has asked for like an emergency debate on this, and Justin Trudeau said, hey, Marc Garneau, find some answers. But Marc Garneau has said, the answer isn't going to be to, reach a deal with Greyhound. It's like finding new carriers to come in and service these areas. But how long is that going to take?
A couple old space shuttles
could
or
take...
something.
Oh, jeez.
Just had to. I couldn't help it.
But, that stuff's going to take years. And, in the meantime, what are we going to do to fill the gap? Like, hire Uber to...
It sounds like it's going to be ride sharing. They're blaming ride sharing now as to whether that... So the ride sharing market out there will probably skyrocket. But at the same time, hitchhiking will also be back in a big way. And definitely not a very good thing for the Highway of Tears. Now, mind you, there is that bus. But they need way more capacity somehow. And like I said, with the Alberta example, It's probably going to fall within the scope of the province if there's going to be anything at all.
Yeah. All right.
In the meantime. It's a travesty.
Yes, it is. It's too bad. Anyway. We're going to end the show. You can stay connected to us all week long at Open Sources. Guelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and you can find us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And you can listen to this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and/or Google Play. I can be found at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And Rerun Sounds Good to Me is here. Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
No, it's true.
Sounds,
it is.
It is a rerun of DJ Sounds Good to Me.
From May the 3rd, 2018.
That just occurred to me the other day, so I thought I'd give it a whirl. Anyway, that rerun's at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back next week with more open sources Thursday at 5, and we will see you then.